Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 21st of May. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about gender in the presidential race. A New York Times front page story caught our attention. I believe it was Monday's New York Times, titled, "As Clinton's Hopes Diminish, Gender Lives On. With each passing day, it seems a little less likely that the next president of the United States will wear a skirt or a cheerful, no-nonsense pantsuit. She's been running to break, and she mentioned this last night, the highest and hardest glass ceiling in American life. And now the presidency that once seemed to be hers seems to be out of reach." The Democratic governor of Arizona says, thanks in part to Mrs. Clinton, she never heard anybody say that she can't be elected because she's a woman. And yet some of her supporters point to a series of slights, fixation on her clothes, chronic criticism that her voice is shrill, calls for her to exit the race, male commentators and news media being consistently tougher on her than on Clinton. And also the problems that maybe women candidates must face, this need to be both tough and warm at the same time. We're going to take on this whole issue of gender and why it is that we got into the race issue during this campaign so far, but we didn't have a deep conversation between men and women about women in politics. We're going to have two guests with us. Debbie Walsh is our guest, the first half hour director of the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University. And later, Georgia Durst-Lottie, professor of political science at Beloit College, will be joining us. We'll be welcoming your phone calls, as we always do, and I would think get more than a few on this issue. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. And we thank you, Professor Debbie Walsh, so much for being with us the first half hour.
Thanks for having me.
Did anybody say, can you recall anybody saying that Mrs. Clinton could not be elected because she's a woman? Has this been an issue or not much of an issue?
Well, I don't think anyone said she can't be elected because she was a woman. I think what was interesting was when the question that's been on the Gallup poll since the 1930s that asks, the way it's framed is, would you elect or would you vote for a qualified woman for president of the United States, which I've always been intrigued with even the framing of the question, you know, that you have to actually put the word in there, qualified. And the way that question has been asked since the 30s, and steadily the percentage of American voters answering that in the positive has been increasing. And it really has been up to about 86% to 90%. Recently they did what's called a split sample on that question, and they divided it, and they asked half of the people that they asked the question to, they asked it that way. The other group they asked, would your neighbor vote for a qualified woman for president? And when they asked it that way, 60% said that my neighbor would vote for a qualified woman for president. And the idea being that there's this need to kind of please the interviewer and not want to appear that you're sexist. So you'd say, yes, I would vote for a qualified woman, but my neighbor, they might be a sexist, and they might not vote for them. So somewhere in between is where it may lie. But I think that the general consensus out there, and I think certainly we're seeing it. I mean, this is a very close race.
Right.
We're not seeing a blowout here.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing lots and lots of American voters supporting Hillary Clinton for president of the United States. They are pulling the lever for a woman candidate.
Mm-hmm. Do women have a particularly difficult time on these issues, and does she have a difficult time because she was criticized for some of her comments to project being tough, commander-in-chief, and also a warm personality as well? Is it harder for a woman to do that, and does she have to do that in this high-stakes political race?
There is no doubt that this has been one of the challenges that women who have run for office have faced when they've run at any level of office. And it has gotten easier for women at other levels, but it is still a real challenge when you're talking about running to be commander-in-chief of the highest, of the leader of the free world. It's really hard. If you have to be strong and tough and powerful, but you also have to maintain that image of being a woman and soft and feminine. And that is a balancing act, a tightrope that a woman has to walk. And when you are the first viable woman candidate for this office, there is no one who has done this before that you can model, that you can say, here's the path to follow. She is doing this for the first time, and so it is very difficult. And so I think absolutely this has been a difficult road for her. And one of the things that I've been disappointed in some ways is that we're still having the same conversation that we were having back in the late 70s, early 80s about this balancing act. It is, in fact, that same discussion about how can a woman be strong and tough and still maintain the softness that is what it is to be woman in this. So it is really a hard and difficult road for the woman candidate in this position. And she's come under tremendous scrutiny and tremendous fire for it in the course of this. And I think she has shown, tremendous resilience under the kind of attack, frankly, that she has had to bear when she has really, I think, had to be tough and in some senses tougher than her male colleagues, because I think, when they stand up there, they fit that image of what the President of the United States is supposed to look like, a man in a blue suit with a white shirt and a red tie. She doesn't fit that image, so she's got to prove herself every day.
Mm-hmm. What about the... Yeah, that's true. It's true that, and I'm wondering what you think about this. The New York Times, CBS News polls show that voters rated Obama's potential as being commander in chief more highly than Clinton. That the American public finds women less plausible military commanders than men, even though neither one of them has had military experience.
Right. It's the maleness, right?
Right.
It's the maleness that carries the day, and so that's the burden that a woman candidate, or the challenge that a woman candidate has to overcome. And I think she has, stood toe-to-toe with these men. And I think when you ask the question at the very beginning about can a woman do it, I mean, I think you have to really acknowledge here that this was a big field of Democratic candidates with a lot of qualified candidates running.
Yes.
And when it comes down to it, it got down to two, and she was one of the two, and it's still a very close race. And in the end, whoever the nominee is, it will have been a very close race.
Right. Do you think that she's made – I was interested last night that she talked about the glass ceiling, and it seems to me – I could be wrong in my perception of this – that she's talked about it more lately, that gender was not something that she was using in her campaign in earlier months. Should she have?
I think that what's come through in these last weeks is that real passion among her women supporters.
Mm-hmm.
And a sense, I think, that she's in it for the long haul till the end, in some senses for them, that there is a real feel out there that for a lot of women, women, as she has even described them, of a certain age, who feel that this may be their last and best hope to see a woman president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of those women, I think they might not even have thought that in their lifetime there would be a woman president. And her candidacy gave them that hope that there might have been a woman president in their lifetime, and that hope is dwindling for them. And that's a hard hope to give up. And that for them, she is really in this to the end for them, and to show them that she's in it for the fight, and she will, she will go to the end for them and give them that chance to vote for a woman for President of the United States,
mm-hmm.
and to fight for it. And I think it also is very meaningful for a generation of women who had dreams and had aspirations, but were a generation of women who were told, here are the three career paths for you.
Exactly.
Nurse, teacher, or
right.
secretary.
Right.
And they were told, no, take typing. That will give you a career. And she's saying to them, I will do this for you, in effect. And right. I think that's really speaking to a lot of women. And it's powerful for them. And I think you heard last night in Senator Obama's speech an acknowledgement of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a respectfulness of that, and I think an understanding of the need to have her stay in the race for that,
mm-hmm.
and an acknowledgement of what this means in the long term, historically, for his daughters and everybody else's daughters. And I think she talked about it last night, and she's been saying this more and more, and I think you're right to perceive that this is doing it for history
mm-hmm.
as well, not just for now, but for history. Because I think there's also, I think, a sense of she's doing this now, and who will come after her, and we're not so sure how many women are in the wings waiting in the immediate near future.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we were speaking with Rachel Maddow last hour, and she made the comment that if she carries this on, and she believes that she will, that she'll really, that there won't be any clear decision made from this meeting on May 31st, and Florida and Michigan will still be up in arms, and that'll create a whole new dynamic and have delegates, pledged delegates, super delegates, really not committed to having to vote for Barack Obama. So we go into the convention because she's pushing it in that direction, where it's going to be up in the air. And her comment was that Senator Clinton could result, her the way she's carrying on now, could result in the Republicans winning the election.
Yeah, I am skeptical that she will take this to the convention. I think that she's going to take it through the primary in June, the last primary in June, and then there will be resolution and let the superdelegates align themselves. And then she is a loyal party person, I think, to her core. I also think that she does not want to be radioactive in the Democratic Party either,
right, right.
And wants a future in the Democratic Party. I think that in some ways, for her to really bring her base to, if she is not the nominee, for her to bring her base to Senator Obama, she goes through till the primaries in June. The superdelegates align themselves. And then she sort of facilitates that healing process. And I think she will do that. I think she is absolutely sincere in what she's talking about. If she is not the nominee, that she will support the nominee completely and totally and work to facilitate that healing. I also think that Senator Obama needs to then reach out to women voters in a very real way. He needs to ask for their votes. He needs to speak to the issues that they care about. It needs to go far beyond the choice issue. There was another piece in the Times about how that was the way he was seeing himself reaching out to women voters. But what women voters need to hear from him, I think, are, you know, about economic issues and survival economic issues, because that's what we know drives in many ways and in large ways that women's vote. Women feel economically vulnerable. He needs to talk about those kitchen table issues, those economic mm-hmm. survival issues. And I think the combination of those two things, I think, have the potential to bring that base of women voters that he needs to win in November. You know, I think that women's vote is going to be very powerful. It is a core base of the Democratic vote. Women voters play a large part in deciding the outcome of the presidential election. He needs that vote, and she will carry great sway
right.
with that vote.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Our guest is Professor Debbie Walsh, director of the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers University, and we're talking about the role of Especially when we talk about the role of race in this presidential race. Today we're talking about the gender issue and welcoming your calls. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. And we'll take your calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Two phone calls now, and we start with Mike from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. Here's one for Mrs. Clinton. First of all, I'm a male and a diehard conservative Republican. However, and politics aside, I must say that I admire her tenacity and her toughness. And from my perspective, I don't want a president who's warm and fuzzy. I want somebody who's going to be really, really tough. And amazingly enough, if it came down to it, if it came down to McCain or Mrs. Clinton, I might be inclined to vote for her. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Debbie.
Well, that's an interesting playing out of the issue of toughness. And I think that one of the things that really came through in this race, and I think it really came through in the debates, particularly the debates that when she was sort of standing there with all of those men, was her strength and her ability to, you know, stand toe-to-toe and talk on the issues and her knowledge and her experience. And I thought that was that really came through in those debate situations.
Mm-hmm. She did shine in those debates. She does her homework. She knows what the issues are. She's very good at presenting them one after another after another after another,
yeah, and
which
I think,
works well.
I think that what happened in this year, I mean, when you go through sort of what happened in this campaign and where it went wrong in some senses for her, was this was a year where, you know, being good on the issues and wasn't really enough.
Yeah.
You know, this was a year where it seemed as though for voters this sense of wanting change was really the overwhelming and overpowering issue.
Mm-hmm.
And while, you know, knowing, kind of being the one who knew everything about all the issues and having a 9-point plan for every
right.
problem wasn't really enough. And that change really captured the imagination of voters, and that really seems to have carried the day.
We go next to Lynn from Milwaukee. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Hi.
Morning. Thank you, Kathleen, first of all, for your program. I enjoy it every day.
Great.
Every day that I can. I am of the demographic that is normally associated as a Hillary supporter, but I am not a Hillary supporter in this case. And I just would like to say I have an exception to the feeling that she's been receiving unfair treatment or that by the press or by other people, and feel that anything that Hillary and her followers have been complaining about are no different than personality traits that, you know, people make fun of George Bush because of his snicker, and they make fun of Hillary Clinton because of her cackle. I see it as a personal critique rather than one about her gender. So I don't think that it's been unfair. I appreciate her very much for her strength and her service to the country, and I look very forward to having Hillary Clinton take over the position of Ted Kennedy when he's no longer able to be the leader in that role.
Yeah, I think that there's some things that are the personality traits that, you know, that you describe, but then I think there's some things that are gender-based. I think that when she's referred to as the B word, I think that then we've crossed the line into gender-based disparaging remarks that I think that we have to have some concern about. I think that when John McCain is asked at an event, you know, how do we beat the B word, and people laugh, and he's not called out on it by the press, and he then laughs himself. I think that when reporters or pundits talk about her and say, well, you know, whenever I'm, whenever I see her, I feel the need to cross my legs. When they're selling items in airports around the country that are an image of her and it's a nutcracker and you open her legs and crack the nut between her legs, these are the kinds of things that I think cross the line. And I think that's the, those are the things that I think raise the concern about the gender-based, issues that, I think we who observe the issue of women's participation in politics have a real concern about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that. On the other hand, she's also facing problems when she talks about coming under enemy fire. That whole thing about her honesty is a fair criticism, I think. Don't you?
Absolutely. I think, you know, these are those are real issues as well. But I think that doesn't negate the fact that there's something going on here about women when they are running for these kinds of offices, when they're running for office, high-level office, that the fallback position then turns into talking about gender in this way. It's the thing I think that disturbs me is that both racism and sexism are wrong. Neither should be tolerated, but sexism becomes a joke. And it becomes something that can be laughed at and is sort of a kind of the guys sitting around on MSNBC having a good laugh over it. And that somehow is tolerable and acceptable, and it shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Lynn, thanks so much for your call. Charles from La Crosse is next. Hi, Charles.
Good morning. Thank you, Kathleen. And this dovetails in pretty well with what was previously just discussed. Your next guest, I believe, was on with Joy, and when they were talking about age, sex, and racism, and I think that was like 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, and I think Joy and your next guest struck the salient point of what your guest now was talking about, that there was no outrage by the press when, you know, the incident came up of ironing my shirt and the B word. The point that was made 2 weeks ago, whatever, was that what if somebody stood up at an Obama rally and said something equally sophomoric, such as, would you tap dance for watermelon? There would be outrage and recoil. So I agree that there is, you know, sexism. And the misogynistic aspect of it is there was no one like David Broder in the press or Bob Schieffer taking it aside saying, yes, there's always going to be someone popping off with some sophomore comment. But we need to register our outrage against such aspects in a, such a high-level campaign as this. I'll take my comments off the air. Thank
okay.
you, Kathy.
Yes, thanks for the call, Charles.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I mean, I think that both are, there is no room for either, and I think there needs to be sort of a recognition that there is a problem with both. And I think that the sexist discourse that has been seen as, you know, funny and seen as a kind of a wink-wink in this campaign, to the point where, you know, people like Chris Matthews have had to apologize, you know, when they talk about Chelsea Clinton and, you know, pimping Chelsea Clinton out when she's campaigning. You know, she's an adult who's choosing to campaign for her mother. I mean, you know, Mitt Romney's kids were campaigning for him. John McCain's daughter is campaigning for him. But when Chelsea Clinton is campaigning, she's pimping for her mother. I mean, this sort of stuff, you know, it needs to stop, and it shouldn't. It needs to stop for this campaign, but it needs to not go on when women run for office.
And just one final question: what about the campaigns themselves? Do you think, and we could come up with examples, we don't have time with you, but do you think that each campaign, the Obama campaign, has been sexist in how they're dealing with the Clinton campaign, and the Clinton campaign has been racist in dealing with the Obama campaign?
I think there have been individuals on campaigns who have said things, and I think that those people have been on both sides, and on both sides they have been reprimanded, let go, resigned, and I think have all said that they have acted as individuals, and hopefully that will have, you know, that will not continue on. Whoever is the nominee, that will not continue on, and that will all get, you know, that will stop as well. But I think that what we're all talking about here is that this kind of discourse in campaigns should not happen. And from as someone who is, observes and watches the campaigns of women candidates, it is disheartening to see that in 2008. This kind of discourse around a woman's campaign has gone on, and at the kind of level, both on network television, on cable television, and certainly overwhelmingly on the internet, it is quite disheartening.
Yeah. Professor Debbie Walsh, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Debbie Walsh is director of the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University. Joining us in just one moment, Georgia Durst Lottie, who's a professor of political science at Beloit University. We're talking about women in politics. The New York Times had a very interesting front page story on Monday. As Clinton's hopes diminish, gender issues lives on. And it looks at what does her run represent for women? Is it a historic, if incomplete, triumph or a depressing reminder of why few pursue high political office in the first place? Does it stir up for many women? One of her demographics is older women. Does it stir up decades? It was, you know, interesting to hear Barbara Walters last hour talk about how difficult it was for her to move beyond being the Today Show girl into moving into substantial reporting. And you got to remember, it hasn't been that long ago where women were working at places where they didn't have management positions, where the pay disparity was even greater than it is now, where they were told that they had three choice of occupations, being a secretary, being a teacher, or being a nurse. And does that make women who have been discriminated against even more likely to support Senator Clinton, the core of her support? Or is she, as some have suggested, just the wrong female candidate, that somebody else would be more popular than she is for a variety of reasons? So that's what we're talking about. And welcoming your calls, we have one line open if you'd like to join us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. And if you want to send an email, that's talk@WPR.org. Professor Georgia Durst Lottie, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Is the problem with her campaign the fact that gender has been a big issue, do you think, or is it that she's just not the right candidate?
I do not know how we can separate those two, like we hear people say it's possible to do. I mean, the very interpretation of Hillary Clinton from the get-go has been filtered through what we know about women, the gender paradigms that we fight about. Do we want women to be helpmates and complements? Do we value femininity and masculinity and sexual difference? Or do we go for women and men are more alike than they are different, and we shouldn't, you know, we should, in fact, ignore differences? So there is no way to know Hillary Clinton and the public person that we understand to be Hillary Clinton without putting it through basically the gender battles that we have. And by the way, this is pretty common for first ladies to be the lightning rod for this throughout history. So it's not a, you know, it's not a question that's really simple to answer.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we were talking earlier about this having to be tough, and it was interesting that she took a lot of criticism from various commentators when she was talking about Iran and obliterating the country should they attack Israel, that it was a sign of her being too tough, which was kind of an interesting take on those comments. Talk a little bit more about how tough a woman needs to be, because we're not familiar with seeing her in the role as commander-in-chief.
Okay, well, let me just say about the obliteration first, and I think you're very well aware of this. If you played the next sentence after that, it was really a different orientation. I mean, this was more of a hypothetical that she was putting out there. And it was a most unfortunate choice of words because of the reaction that it got. But the way she was talking about it is not really the way it's been framed in the public conversation. But back to Tuff. I've done research on this very word, and it's absolutely essential. And I looked at the media coverage, newspaper, because it's easiest to do in research, newspaper coverage of the different areas of the presidency. And as women have been, you know, from Geraldine Ferraro on, sort of in the public eye around the presidency, the different functions of the presidency have really fallen away so that they've become okay for a woman to do, except commander-in-chief. And that usually was talked about in 2000 when Elizabeth Dole was out there for a little bit, and then in 2004 around Carol Moseley Braun, that usually was talked about in the coded terms of crisis decision-making. So one of the really, really important things that happened in this election cycle is that Hillary Clinton has demonstrated that at least one woman is tough enough. Now, every time somebody says gender doesn't matter and it's not important here, I say she did not have a choice about whether to demonstrate she was tough enough. So when, especially criticism from other women, that she was too tough, she didn't really have a choice. And it's a choice that she was confronted with because she is a woman that none of the men had to deal with. Now, I'm not saying that we're not going to see a big fight over masculinity like we did in 2004 if Barack Obama does become the nominee, and it certainly looks like it's headed in that direction, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't really questioned on whether or not he was tough enough. That wasn't the kind of questioning that he got. Now, you know, now it's being turned into judgment. Is this the right approach? I mean, that kind of stuff. But, you know, here's a black man. Are black men tough enough? It wasn't even a question posed to him, whereas Hillary had to answer that question from the get-go, which then put her into the, you know, terrible position of being too tough.
Mm-hmm.
So women always have to negotiate gender in politics, and men simply don't always have to negotiate gender.
Here's an email, interesting one from Gloria from Madison. I can't get through the phones. I wanted to say I'm a 65-year-old woman who would like nothing better than to vote for a woman for president, but not this woman. One big reason probably stems from her attempt perhaps to counter sexism, and that is to be tough, what we're just talking about. That's why I think she voted for the war in Iraq, to show she would be a tough commander-in-chief. The same goes for her Iran vote and comments.
Yes, I think, I mean, she could well, and I actually believe this, have believed at the time that she was doing the right thing in voting to send troops to Iraq. We can all recall that we didn't exactly get good information on this, and not that I, you know, this is not my own personal position that I'm putting forward here, but, you know, Barack Obama didn't actually have to make the vote in Senate. It's much different to sit back and put out a position paper than to be right there and make the vote in that time period when we were making that vote. So, you know, we don't really know what he was going to do in there. But, you know, this is an old breakdown among women, even feminist women. Are women naturally peaceful, or should they be naturally peaceful because of their role with children, the fact that they're the ones who give birth, they give life basically, and men, you know, give death, if you will. And so this peace side of feminism has long been at odds with, say, liberal feminism that enters into politics as they are. It's really more of a real, you know, real realism in politics, especially the international side of things. Whereas there's just lots of women, a good contingent of feminists, really align with peace. And when we saw the break for Obama, it was very familiar to those of us who have been around feminism a long time, because it was the same fights we'd had 30 years ago.
Mm, yeah. Let's go to some phone calls. Mark from Janesville. Hi.
Good morning. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
All right. I wanted to comment that I think in 1982, a lot of these issues went by the boards when Margaret Thatcher promptly responded as Prime Minister of England with the Falkland invasion. And I really think that your guests talking about the role of sexism is missing the point that Hillary may just be the wrong candidate. And I say this from experience as a lawyer. I've watched a lot of ladies as lawyers struggle with this issue of trying to be assertive and aggressive in a courtroom without coming off witchishly. And it's a very difficult tightrope they walk. I just submit that it is Hillary Clinton that hasn't walked it well, and that's the problem here, not misogynistic voters.
The problem is she has to walk it at all relative to men, and that's a conversation that we haven't really had. And, Mark, my research, my life's work, as a scholar, has really been on gender and power and gender ideology as it operates. And so, you know, we've had a conversation about sexism, and that's really a pretty superficial conversation when it comes to the way structural power is aligned in this country, when it comes to, you know, the large issue that women have to be ladies. Men don't always have to be gentlemen. In fact, they're sometimes punished for being too polite. Women are punished for not being polite enough. I mean, it's at that level that we haven't even begun to have a conversation. So the fact that you say that, you know, she just didn't negotiate it well. You know, I can say that I can agree with you wholeheartedly that there may be some mythical woman out there who can walk the line, as you're saying, but I don't know who it is. And Margaret Thatcher was elected on a very different system. She had to appease her party colleagues, not the citizenry, and it's a very, very different dynamic. And Britain has a long history of strong female leaders with their queens. We don't have that history, and frankly, lots of scholars of masculinity have argued that the U.S. has a much more rigidly enforced separation of the public and private spheres than any place in Western Europe has. So we really have quite a different situation. And Margaret Thatcher was seen as very, very masculine. I mean, they used to do comedy where she'd rip open her shirt and have this manly chest that would come out in British humor. So she was allowed to be this masculine guy. And if you go back and think about Queen Elizabeth I actually cut her hair so that she would no longer be seen as eligible for marriage. And that's how, you know, she became the queen who could rule, in essence, as a man. And so you have to do it as a man, and yet you're a woman, and therefore you have to negotiate the fact you're a woman. It's much more complicated than sexism straight up.
More phone calls in a moment. Professor Georgia Durst-Lotti, professor of political science at Beloit College, is our guest. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We want to thank Mark for the call. We have one line open at 800-486-8655 or 414-227-2050. You can also send an email if you'd like, and we'll try to get to it, talk@WPR.org. What we're talking about this hour is gender in the presidential race. We've talked much more about race than gender. And our guest this half hour is Professor Georgia Durst-Lotti, professor of political science at Beloit College. Next caller is Gary from Madison. Hi, Gary.
Yes, hi. I think that there's the bias has been just shameful, the gender bias and the media bias. I've lost all respect for Chris Matthews. And even that young woman you had on before that, Rachel, is unashamedly an Obama supporter. I don't understand young women turning their backs on Hillary Clinton. And some of the Obama supporters have been just more than snotty. I don't understand. What did the Obama supporters hate most about the Clinton administration? Was it the peace or the prosperity? You know, they're not killing kids on the sidewalks of Bosnia anymore. The Ireland is now the most successful economy in Europe, all due to, in large part, to the Clinton administration. I feel very badly for the Clintons. I'll vote for Obama, but believe me, I'll be holding my nose. I'll take my comments off the air.
All right, Gary, thanks.
I agree with Gary wholeheartedly about deplorable treatment in the media. Chris Matthews, I have totally lost respect for him. And what is truly ironic, from my point of view, what I'm about to say, it turns out when we look at the ways in which the candidates have been treated, that Fox News has in fact been the most fair and balanced, in part because they did not give a free ride to Obama. And they actually were positive and negative about the same rates for each of the candidates, including McCain, I might add. And this is by a very carefully done study by a scholar at George Mason University. And Hillary actually has gotten better treatment on Fox, of all places, than on MSNBC and CNN, where I agree with Gary, they're quite enamored with Obama. And just, you know, just allowing sort of sexist stuff to be said, I would say that there are many reasons young women turn their back on older women. And it really comes down to this kind of cognitive dissonance. If you say that there are still sexist problems in this world, that gender power is not equally distributed, you basically are accepting the fact that there is a problem that you cannot overcome individually or that you are going to confront as an individual. And because of the way these dynamics are set up, individually, women, especially young attractive women, advance easier if they say there's no problem, because then they are feeding into the system that says there's no problem. As they get older, generally speaking, women confront more of these problems. And so as an individual, it's advantageous to say there's no sexism and to not identify with feminism, to be post-feminist, to say, you know, I'm not a feminist, but as a collective, it harms all women and harms them. And it's a very tricky rationality to have to confront.
Thanks very much for the call. We go to Barbara next from Waupaca. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I'm really glad you're having this conversation. I think it is important. And I think there are several things that I know I have been thinking about in this. And one of them is that in any event, this is an historic election. The Democrats are going to end up with an historic candidate, whichever one it is. And I think that every candidate will get unfair characterizations and has, whether it be for old age or gender or race, whether what Bush has faced is ignorance and stupidity characterizations. There have been bobblehead dolls. This is the kind of thing that we simply need to say nobody should be doing this kind of thing. And Obama has had watermelon comments directed at him. Romney's sons were derided for campaigning for their father. I remember people saying, why aren't they in the service? They're all out campaigning. They're not defending their country. Our problem and opportunity at this point, it seems to me, is to be able to step back and say that whereas we have become such an either-or culture, you know, if women should be for Hillary because it's so historic. Yes, it is. And I am glad, I'm grateful she's doing this. And I'm grateful she's staying in and has been staying in with the grace that she has shown. And I say that not thinking that she has been particularly graceful, but I think she has shown grace under the circumstances that she has been affected with. And I think that appearance has a great deal to do with this. I cannot see anyone, and this is what I think is a real discrimination, I cannot see anyone in America electing Golda Meir or Margaret Thatcher for the way they looked. And if if McCain were female and the age that he is, we would never be considering a woman who was that age. And I think it's this is the kind of thing that discrimination that doesn't get looked at so much, it seems to me. And the first female in any position has to be too tough. I went to art school, and I remember the one female art teacher was, you know, she was the toughest, most raunchy, most, you know, most over-the-top professor of all, because she was the only woman. And that's unfortunate. I think that is unfortunate. But as blacks have generally had to be superiorly qualified to get jobs, women have had to be too tough, so to speak, to get into the male male environs. And I'd like to see us work towards backing off from all of this either-or in our culture.
Georgia?
Barbara raises lots and lots of important points here. Indeed, it's historic for race or gender, and we should be, you know, noting that and marking it and thinking about the implications, and I do with great pleasure. And it was actually historic when Hillary made it into the Iowa caucus, because the closest we got to a woman into the Iowa caucus was with Carol Moseley Braun, and she dropped out 3 days before. We can go back to Shirley Chisholm in 72, but if we look at the current way it's set up, you know, just having Hillary get into the Iowa caucus was further than we had gone before. I will agree that we have unfair characterizations of everyone, but I think Barbara then comes back to the ways in which attacks and approaches to women tend to be personalized. And I agree wholeheartedly that women must be more attractive. Now, men are starting to be required to be attractive, too, and I'm not sure that that's the best thing that's happened, because Abe Lincoln certainly wasn't handsome, and he was a fine president. So, you know, we should probably be moving away from needing to be a beauty queen on for either men or women, and yet women really have the hair husband hemline problem. You know, that's way too much attention given to their personal appearance, and it is really easy to attack women on the way they look or for anything in their personal, you know, their characteristics, their laugh, I mean, all of that stuff. And frankly, if everyone recalls, Rush Limbaugh made the age comment, we really want to have a woman age before our eyes, as though this is the highest, most important value that women have, is to be beautiful and young. So, you know, all of these come there, and Barbara's last point is, as I would put it, that we need that women who get into these positions of power really need to out-masculine the males. You know, that they have to prove that they can perform masculinity, as we would say in gender theory, that they can behave in ways that match the toughest of men, the strongest of men, the most able of men. And in doing so, they often are contradicting what we expect of women, and therein lies the challenge. How can you show that you can do the job that's been predicated upon masculine assumptions and behaviors and preferences without being a bad woman, which you are?
We have time for one more call, but just about a minute left. Nancy from De Pere, hi.
Good morning. Thank you. I was curious about your reaction to what I felt was a very powerful symbolic sexist gesture, which was Barack Obama on two occasions held the chair for Hillary Clinton during debates. It seemed to me that it was a statement that how could you be powerful enough to lead the free world if you need a man to pull your chair out for you? Small but very subtle and powerful, in my opinion. I'm just curious your reaction.
I think, Nancy, your analysis of the subtext is absolutely accurate. However, if you say this out loud, as you well know, what will happen is people will say, well, he was just trying to be polite. And, you know, many women actually like to be treated like ladies, not recognizing the power differential that comes with ladylike behavior. So your analysis would be right on the money with mine, but just think about the way this would play culturally to talk about this. It's like, oh, those feminists, you know, they just want to be man-hating, you know, don't shave their legs. I mean, those are the kinds of stereotypes you get into when you call gentility for its power dimensions.
No, we have to say goodbye. Thank you, Georgia. Professor Georgia Durst-Lotti from Beloit College, and we also thank Debbie Walsh from American Women in Politics at Rutgers for being with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the show and on-air production. We'll be with you again tomorrow.